First of all, from Matthew, the 13th chapter, and this is the chapter where Jesus spake in parables. And he spoke the parable of the soils, or the parable of the sower. And as he explained the parable of the sower, he explained it by expressing the four different kinds of soils into four different metaphors that speak a particular truth. But in verse 22, he also that receives seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. This afternoon, as we look at chapter 5 in the book of James, the first six verses, it begins by a denunciation of those who are rich. And as we consider all of these words that are said, are written about the wealthy, I think our first impression would be to assign all of this to the wealthy people who are unconverted, who have no knowledge of God, who have never been born again, people who have never been saved. But if we do that, we will have to break our line of Bible interpretation, because all the other verses we have said that these applied to people who were involved in a congregation. All of these people who were inconsistent in the way they lived, and the people who had been partial in the way they had treated people, the ones who had worked but didn't have faith, and some who had faith and didn't work, will have to step outside the congregation, the body of Christ, believers, and say, now James is just writing a note or word of condemnation to the lost wealthy of his age. But I think he's still writing to people who were involved in the congregation, or congregations plural, to whom he's writing. And if we make that application, we can see how people are deceived by wealth. That's what Jesus said, that because of the deceitfulness of riches, these people who had tasted the good word, or who had received the word, were people who allowed themselves to be choked out and their service to God choked out because they had a love for wealth. Now, when you study what Timothy was written to, as Paul wrote to him about wealth, when you consider other statements that Jesus made about wealth, and how hardly shall they that have wealth or have riches enter into the kingdom of heaven. There's many, many statements about wealth. Some of it applies to those who have not been saved, and some of it applies to people that have been saved. I think that there were people who had attended or had become a part of the congregation, and they had these problems that are mentioned here. And if that is true, it makes it so much more sobering a warning to us, the deceitfulness of riches. James 5, verses 1 through 6. Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. You have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Ye have lived in pleasure on this earth, and you have been wanton. You have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and kill the just, and he doth not resist you. This threat of the deceitfulness of riches to the well-being of humans still exists today. We think of other things as being a threat to our lives. We worry that our children may come in contact with cocaine or something even more unthinkable, such as AIDS. And we think about society as whole, and we think about, well, these are real threats to our lives, alcoholism and, as I said, cocaine and all these things. And we think about, we better steer clear of these things, because if we get involved in them, they'll ruin our lives. And that's true, they will. They will ruin your life. All of the things that the world seems to be so afraid of today, they ought to be afraid of it, because it will take your physical life. It'll ruin your life. But how many times are we threatened, or do we feel threatened, by wealth? And remember, it's not wealth so much as it is the love of wealth. That's what Paul wrote to Timothy, that the love of money is the beginning of all kinds of evil. So many of the serious problems that God's people bring upon themselves have to do with getting wealth. And it is a great warning to us, because we can get in a circumstance where we love money. We may not have any, but we may love it and desire it, and in that lose our Christian testimony and lose our fellowship with God and with God's people. Now, here's a statement that I think all of us will smile inwardly whenever I make it, and that is that wealth will cause misery. And you're probably thinking, I could take some of that discomfort. But the Bible tells us that wealth will cause misery. Maybe we ought to say, wealth may cause misery. I think that's more in line with what the Scriptures teach. It doesn't have to, but it may. There is the possibility that wealth will create misery. James wrote, "Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you." The word weep means simply to cry, but the word howl is a word that imitates the hoarse cry of a bird, like a crow. And it has in it the idea of violent grief. So weep and make the sounds that accompany violent grief. Why? For the miseries that shall come upon you. The word misery here literally means hard work. But what does hard, grinding, severe labor do for a person? It brings upon them misery. So this has to do with great bodily exertion, which figuratively is distress and misery. Think of being a person who's faced with unremitting, unrelenting labor for a long period of time, 7 days a week, 14 hours a day. Think of being in that circumstance for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and think of the misery that would create in your life. Wealth can create that same kind of misery. And there may be a relationship here. You know, if you will give anything to get wealth, then you'll give up anything to keep it. You think about that. If you're willing to sacrifice sacred things to get wealth, you're willing to sacrifice sacred things to keep wealth. If you're willing to sacrifice some of your moral principles, your honesty, integrity, to get it, you would have to sacrifice even more to keep it. So in that sense of the word, it does present that kind of miserable circumstance that could come upon us. That is, when you look for money, when your whole interest in life is wealth, then misery will come upon you. Literally, will grab you. It will seize you. As I said, there are many, many warnings in the Bible about wealth. 1 Timothy 6, 7 through 19, 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 10, Matthew 19, 20 through 23 through 26, Jesus warns against wealth. And then there's the parable or the story of the rich man in Luke chapter 16, which fared sumptuously every day. Obviously, he was not a saved man, but it gives to us the idea of people who pursue wealth, and that's their whole life's job. Now, notice this. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. He's not saying that this will happen to you, but he is saying this is already happening to you. Your riches are already corrupted. And that word means to be rotten. Your riches are already moth-eaten. Your wealth is lying rotting, and your fine clothes are moth-eaten. That's in a present tense. And what he's showing is that wealth deteriorates. It rots. It decays. The idea, well, I've got gold and silver. Well, look at the statement in the verse next to it. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you. Now, people have pointed out that gold doesn't rust and silver doesn't rust, but James had in mind coins that oftentimes had a great content of iron or other metals added to them. And so he's saying, like a coin that you lie up and hope to get back later, it will rust through. And this idea of rusting here simply means that which flakes off from metals. So gold and silver, that is coined gold and silver, will rust through. And it will create a dust. And this dust will be a witness against you, and this shall eat your flesh as it were fire. That is, the canker, the rot, the decay of your wealth will be like fire to your flesh. I've never thought that Sam Walton was without pain when the stock market plunged so much and he was supposed to have lost millions and millions of dollars, and then he said, well, it's only paper. He probably didn't worry that much about it, but I imagine there was some pain there. There would have been, I guess, to about anyone. But what James is trying to show these people is that there's nothing that you can count on. If you buy gold, if you buy silver, and you store it up, it's going to rust. And then the gold, the clothing you bought, you're going to look at it and it's going to be rotting and it's going to be in shreds. So all of these things, the rotten material and the rust from the coins, are simply become witnesses to the fact that you got involved in wealth, and it's going to sting and hurt and burn like taking fire to your flesh. People who have wealth, who've gotten it every way they could, oftentimes when they lose it, they lose their mind, they lose contact. Oftentimes they commit suicide. Why? Because it hurts them so deeply to lose their wealth. You have heaped treasure together for the last days. This is a very poignant expression. It means that you have piled up wealth, and the end is near. You will never enjoy it. You remember the parable of the rich fool who built houses and barns and then tore down his houses and barns and expanded them and built bigger because of the extravagant crops that he had made. And he said, now that I've got all of this stored, or I have made provision to store it, I'll say to my soul, soul, take thine ease. And why was this man a fool? Because Jesus said, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. What was happening? He thought everything was in great shape, but in that very night he died and left all of his wealth. James is trying to show these people that the pursuit of wealth, the accumulation of wealth, simply have tragedy and misery built in them when they are accomplished by people who are dishonest. Now, these people got their wealth dishonestly. Let's look at that. In verse 4, he states, "Behold the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields." These people that James is talking about here were landowners. They had hired day laborers to harvest their cereal crops. They then, on some legal technicality, cheated these poor people out of their wages. These were not people who lived with them all year long and worked, as we would say, sharecroppers. These was the person who was brought in to reap the harvest. And they might use them for a day, they might use them for 2 days, they might use them for 3 weeks, but it was a short period of employment. And after this person had worked and came for his wages, on some law type thing, some technicality, they would not give these people the money they had earned. The Bible uses the word fraud, and it means to withhold by giving some untenable reason. And it said that this cries out. Notice, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And again, the word cry here is the sound of a crow or a vulture or something who's in distress. So it has that idea of being and making sounds of just total and complete abandonment. And that's how these people felt. You've seen some here in Little Rock who said, you know, we'll work for food, and you wonder about it. But if you took someone that was just standing on a street corner and honestly didn't have anything, who had children and a family, and you took him and worked him for 10 or 12 hours and then brought him back and let him out and said, "Now look, according to the law, I don't have to pay you because you didn't show me your Social Security card." And on that technicality, you just drove off and left him there. So this man, out of just sheer fright, would cry out and wail because now he has to go home and face a hungry family because he has no money. He worked all day, he worked hard, but the wealth, the wages were withheld from him. And this, you know, makes us wonder, are these people really saved people? Could a saved person really do that? And James seems to indicate that people could do that. Now notice, "And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth." This idea here has the idea of the cry that these people made has entered into the Lord of hosts, the Lord who is the commander of all that occurs in the earth. And the implication is, and he has heard, and he has noted what you have done. Then in verse 5, how did they use this, the wages that they'd kept back by fraud? Well, notice, "You have lived in pleasure on the earth and have been wanton." The idea is soft living in luxury. The word wanton means one who spends lavishly on oneself for self-gratification. Here on earth, you've lived self-indulgent and profligate lives. Notice, "You have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter." And again, he points out the ultimate end of those who would live this way and treat other people this way. "You have nourished," which means to fatten, and "you have nourished your hearts, your inward being." That that part of you that you should be nourishing with the Word of God and the truth of God, you have nourished your hearts with the things of life, a desire for wealth, and with wantonness and with pleasure directed only at yourself. And this has fattened you for the day of slaughter. You know, we used to have what we call fattening hogs, and we just, last 30 days of their life, we fed them everything they'd eat. They'd walk away from a trough full of food. They just eat until they just couldn't hold anymore, and then they'd get fatter and fatter until finally they couldn't walk. Sometimes they'd just lie down, and that was that. They would just continue to eat until they were fat, but we were fattening them for a purpose. We fattened them for the purpose of slaughter. And James says that you're seeking after wealth and then getting it by defrauding others. You are fattening yourself for a slaughter. Your life is going to end, just like the rich man's life ended, who built the barns and tore them down, built more, and then said, "Now I'm wealthy, I'll soul take thine ease." But that night he was slaughtered. And James is saying that's what's going to happen to you if you gain your wealth by fraud, taking the wages that belong to other people and using it to heap luxury upon yourself. You're not getting wealthy because it's already decayed, it's already rotting, it's already rusting. All you're doing is fattening your inner being for the slaughter, and of course the slaughter will come with the judgment of God. You have condemned and killed the just. The word killed here means to give a sentence, and killed has to do with taking life. Murder. This is figuratively speaking, of course, and draws heavily from the Old Testament, especially the idea of causing death and sorrow to a man's family by withholding his wages. The farmers were not to cut the grain that was in the corners. They were to leave it. They weren't to cut the grain that was next to a fence. They were to leave it. They weren't to go around and pick all the grain up off the field. They were to leave that for the poor and the poverty stricken. And it would cause great suffering when a farmer gleaned his corners and then gleaned the field to take all of the dropped grain up off the field. And when he did that, it was just left barren. When he thrashed the trees, took everything off of it, left it totally barren, then the poor had no place to go, and it threatened their very life. And that's what James is talking about here. You have sentenced people to death, and you didn't care. You held their wages back, and it was a life-threatening thing to them, and you were not moved with compassion when you did that. And you did this to just people. You did it to God's people, and they had no recourse. The Bible tells us, and you have killed the just, and notice, and he doth not resist you. That is, that just man whom you have robbed of his wages, there wasn't anything he could do about it. He had no recourse. He could not take up battle against you. That word resist here means to literally put on your armor and go to war. And these poor people couldn't do that. They would have been slaughtered instantly if had they fomented some kind of rebellion. These people were passive. They couldn't be anything else. They could not do anything. They were helpless people, helpless children of God, whom these people had no compassion for. They wanted the wealth, they wanted the pleasure, they wanted the money, they wanted the coins, they got it. People were threatened in life. These people were not accumulating wealth. They were like hogs in a pen, just getting fatter for the slaughter. Might not be a bad idea if some of the people in our world today who are in business, and they might consider the people who work for them a little bit more compassionately. And there are many scriptures that teach that the people who work for others ought to consider themselves and give a good day's work. There's always room for problems on either side. But here James is condemning the wealthy and not the worker. It could have easily have been the other way, as it was in other books of the Bible, such as in Titus and 1 and 2 Timothy, but not here. Now, as we consider that, I don't know of any wealthy people in our congregation. All of us have a lot, and we're grateful for it. When I say we have a lot, we have warmth, and we have homes, and we have plenty of food, and we have a lot, really. And I think you're grateful for it. I hope you are. But don't ever let a love for money ruin your life. Don't ever say, I could make a lot of money, like these people who were going to buy and sell and get gain we talked about this morning. Don't ever let that kind of passion so disturb and uproot your life that you make great sacrifices, because it'll only create misery in your life. They that would love wealth, Paul said, pierce themselves through with many arrows. He said a love for money is going to create the misery of just shoving daggers and arrows into your body. And that hurts. But that's the kind of pain you can bring on yourself if you can't keep in check a passion for wealth.